The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International.
This will be episode 6 of Comics League International. I'm Brent, your lovable and affable host. And joining me today is... Introduce yourself.
Hello, people of Comics League International. My name is Derek Adams. I'm a long-term friend of Mr. Brent Thomas.
Huzzah.
It's back true.
We go back to college, theater, role play, comic book, friends.
We're huge dorks.
Yes, and we share a love, a bond. So
yeah, I was trying to explain to someone who you were to me, who doesn't know you and didn't know us. Like, I was like, it's basically like in Chrono Trigger. Like, this is the guy who I'd have my double tech with.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were like, you're a huge dork. And I was like, shut your face, we're not friends anymore.
No, that person sounds like a tool. The way I described you, and this is going to be a little heartfelt and emotional, so deal with it, was basically, yeah, you know, you have those friends who you go like 2 days without talking to and you don't really care, and then you have the friends who you can go like 6 months with and like talk to again, and you're just right back in the same pattern, the same rapport. And
I want to cry.
I know, right? We're so emotional.
I'm crying on the inside.
Well, you know, because here's where I think some of those bonds were formed, is going to the same comic shop, buying the same issues of Young Justice, going back to whoever's apartment, not speaking, reading those issues of Young Justice.
Mm-hmm. Like,
oh God, it's so cool.
And then we went on the quest together to get all the Cerebus phone books too.
Yeah. I still haven't finished the final one because it came out after I moved to Japan, and it just kind of is sitting here, and I just look at, you know, the issues and go, I'd be so alone if I read this now. No one would understand my tears of it could either be beautiful or it could be awful. It's Dave Sim, so who knows.
It gets really, really weird. Like, the last, like, 30 issues are really weird. But then, like, the last 10 are awesome. And you're like, okay, yes, that is the end, and I'm satisfied with it.
I
don't know why I had to wade through Dave Sim's crazy novel that he wrote to get here. But, yeah.
Like, I can't...
We can do another podcast just on Cerebus.
We should, because now I just kind of want to talk about it some more and... but we're not here to talk about Cerebus, but in a way, we're talking about something sort of similar to at least the first 50 issues of Cerebus.
Mm-hmm.
Rat Queens, which is by Curtis J. Weib? Weeb?
Weeb? Weeb?
W-I-E-B-E.
Weeb?
Weeb, exactly. And Rock Upchurch. I'm just going to call him Curtis and Rock, so I don't have to worry about butchering his last name.
Okay, fine by
Curtis,
me.
Curtis did the story.
Which is funny. They're like a big deal now.
Really?
Yeah, in American comics, like in sort of in the hip, cool comics club, they are definitely like a big deal. Like Rat Queens has been quite... Like their first printings of this, they ran out many times.
Oh, yeah. I've read the first 5 issues, and I read the letters pages, or at least snippets of them. And talking about, like, the first 2 or 3 issues all sold out, which is pretty awesome for a comic, basically, that's a D&D game.
Yeah, it is totally steeped in Dungeons & Dragons, fantasy, tropes.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Like it's what I only read it like a month or two ago, and I was like, why did I wait so long to read this? I am the target audience for this.
I think it's one of the things about Dungeons and Dragons type stuff is, I mean, I love it. I love fantasy. I love playing D&D when I get the chance. But I've been conditioned to that if something's going to come out that's going to be like D&D or fantasy based, 9 times out of 10, it's going to kind of be not.
It's going to be garbage.
It's going to be that thing you want to be like, well, no, you see what they were going for.
But see, if you understand the context, have you read Michael Moorcock, then you might see what was kind of...
Villains going. By Necessity was...
It's out of print. I can't find a copy. Mike Smith stole mine. What an
Did
asshole.
Mike steal? That is an
Yes! Idea. Yes! Okay, I'm bringing this back up. This is getting discussed. So, those of you unfamiliar, there's a fantasy novel called Villains by Necessity.
It's awesome.
By Eve Forward. If you like Rat Queens... You should read it, but here's the caveat. You can't, because it is out of print, and it was only ever in paperback. Currently, every time I look every year or so to see if I can find another copy, but it's so rare, even on like eBay and Amazon, like a copy is like $800.
Shit.
I once owned a copy of this book and loved it and lent it to a friend who lost it. So not only was it lost, and it was an awesome book, because it's basically a huge spoof of Dragonlance.
Yeah, yeah. But
it's also just a really good story, and the characters are awesome. And
I read it before I even read any of the Dragonlance stuff, and it's just awesome, because since Dragonlance
it's a great story.
Pretty much all the tropes of the hero quest anyway, it works.
Yeah, and, it's awesome. And a couple times I've gone online and be like, okay, where did this author go? Like, I've tried, like, Google stalking them. I can't find her.
Yeah,
like,
someone
off the map. Like, there's no Facebook page. There's no Wikipedia. There's a Wikipedia entry, but it's a stub. Like, it's called, like, someone who was writing before the internet was huge, and they clearly stopped writing or I don't know, passed away. I hope not. You know, like...
Yeah.
Like, that's my true goal of one day becoming, like, some sort of internet superstar. So I can find out, like, what happened to her. Are there more books?
Someone with more reach than us needs to, like, I don't know, reach out, find the person, or at least get a copy, figure out how to do a Kickstarter, if nothing else, just to make that available as an ebook. So,
yeah, I feel like it's an important part of, like, the fantasy genre that is kind of functionally lost.
And because...
like,
to pull it back to Rat Queens a little bit.
Sorry. Yeah,
No worries.
I mean, you know this. I'm the tangent master. So.
Yes. So this podcast will be broken up over 3 parts, each part being an hour and a half.
Part one. Despair.
Villains by Necessity. Somewhat bordering around Rat Queens. But the thing is it's a group of likable characters who, you know, in Villains by Necessity, they're obviously villains. But in Rat Queens, it's 4 characters. Would they even be... anti-heroes, or would they just be like villains, or just fucking crazy people?
I think anti-hero is a term that gets thrown around a lot when people just want to say my dude's kind of badass.
Yeah,
but no, like they're not anti-heroes. Like they're not lawful good, to use the terminology.
No.
They are. They're fuck offs. They're awesome. They're like I love the whole setup of this world because it's dumb. Like, it doesn't make any sense, logically, that there's just this town with adventuring teams doing stuff. But
which
who cares? Because
it's
fun.
Which makes it better. Like, which makes it better.
That's what fantasy is for. That's what comics is for.
Like,
is to give yourself license to tell cool stories. But, yeah, oh man. Like, I don't consider... They're heroes. They are heroes. They fight bad things. They mean well. But they're fuck-ups. I mean, that's why it's a fun story.
It's great. And... shit, I don't even... Because I'm looking, and... Let's go ahead and address it. Because I'm looking at the pages, and one of the things... I mean, I think the dialogue and the characterization through the story is great.
Mm-hmm.
However, what I think really does help sell this initial arc is how strong the art is.
It's extremely strong.
Yeah, like, it's colored and inked and penciled all by the same guy, Rock Upchurch. And he does a great job of not making these four women who are four different races. There's what's probably an elf, a smidgen, which is basically... The smidgens basically seem to... you could argue they're either gnomes or halflings.
Mm-hmm.
You got a tender.
We want to go old school.
Ooh, you and your dragonlance. Keeping
the old ways.
Yep. But you have all those, the four different races of human, most likely. And they're all attractive,
mm-hmm.
but they're not sexed up.
Oh, no. Which is funny because the comic is overtly sex positive.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, all of them have natural libidos, and there's no slut shaming. It's just like, they like to have sex. Yeah. They're cool. They're badass. Like, they can do whatever they want. That's why they're great.
In the opening double splash page, you know, I mean, there's some heaving cleavage, but none of it seems excessive. It's not like Greg Land. It's not like, look, I'm available to whoever's willing. It's none of that. It's just, but I feel weird praising the positives of the art because I wake up this morning, doop a doop a doop, gonna be doing a podcast in about an hour. Ooh, let me scroll through Facebook. Rock Upchurch, artist of Rat Queens, arrested for domestic abuse.
Yeah.
And...
Sometimes I wish we could just, like, that you would never know who the person that created the art. I kind of had a similar problem with Orson Scott Card.
Yeah.
When he kind of came out as extremely homophobic and extremely opposed to marriage equality. Like, not even to the point where, like, I hate this, but I'm going to keep quiet about it. No, he went out of his way.
To fund groups to...
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he didn't just have an opinion. He had an opinion and tried to do his best to make sure we keep the gays away from us, which is icky.
I mean, it's the whole, like, how much can you divorce the artist from his art?
Yeah.
You know, like I love Ender's Game and I love Rat Queens, but I've been finding out, you know, not that they're necessarily on the same level or anything.
No. I mean, they're very different genres, but they both have that same, like...
Yeah, well, it's just that, like, when you love something, you want to love the person that made it.
Yeah.
And then when you find out, they're like, oh, wait, they're kind of, they are allegedly a shitty person. We don't know exactly everything. But, like, it complicates it. I mean, and I feel like it's something that...
It does
should always base the text on its own merits. But you, as a person who is going to buy things from this person, you should know these things about them if it informs your decision.
It's easier for me to justify reading and enjoying Ender's Game because, you know, we kind of talked about this beforehand. We have at least a long period of time and we have, like, plausible deniability or separation of maybe who he was when he wrote that, but when Card wrote Ender's Game is different than the Card who is now.
You know, possibly.
I can make that argument in my head and still be like, nah, man, Ender's Game, the book, is awesome. Whereas this, it's so close to it. Rat Queens is so close to the guy being arrested that it's you can't be like, oh, that's a completely different...
Yeah, and it's one of those, like, I would never fault anyone who said, like, you know, like, oh, he's an abuser, then I will buy nothing he ever does ever again.
Yeah.
Like, that makes total sense to me. But at the same time, I wouldn't fault someone being like, but he's not the only person that made the comic. Like, there's a writer, there's the other people that worked on it. Like, and also, like, so at this point, I really like these characters and I want to know what happens next.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, so that's one of those, like, I have no answer. I have no grand philosophy.
So
I know I will want to read the next Rat Queens episode.
I will, and I'll continue to read it. But it will be kind of with that. There's a little bit of stink on it now.
Yeah, there definitely is. That's one of those, like, and then we just kind of
say,
I don't know what to say. I don't know what to tell people. Yeah. I don't know what I'll do when I walk into the store and see the second trade. Like, it'll literally be just like, yeah.
So. Well, I hear that at least there's been a couple of fill-in artists. So, I mean, this is so new. I don't know if Curtis has released a statement, if there's any plans going ahead, what's going to be there.
I'm sure it'll develop as it goes.
Yeah, with... I don't want to make any speculations. I can only imagine that with... I mean, since this is such a great example, the comic itself, separated from anything else, is a great example of empowering female characters who mm-hmm. are from different backgrounds, mm-hmm. Who engage in badassery, and who aren't, you know, who don't feel like stereotypes of this is what a female character should be.
They're great. They're great they're characters. Great.
They're great. Like, even, you know, Betty, the smidgen, just, mm-hmm. She's wonderful.
She's great.
All of them.
I mean, they're kind of playing with the tropes of the halfling and the dwarf and that kind of thing, but these characters are great. Like, they're so much fun, and I just haven't really seen these type of female characters before, or at least not a lot.
And with those strengths, I can't imagine it would be an easy decision. It's not going to be an easy decision regardless, but, you know, I think keeping the current artist, keeping Rock Upchurch on it, will ultimately hurt the sales potential of the title.
Yeah.
You know, it seems the exact audience this type of comic is likely to pull in will also be the comic who understandably would not want to support someone who beats his wife.
Yeah, like, you can't draw these badass women and then turn around and beat your wife.
Let's
consider the text.
Yes.
I was actually thinking, mainly because this is kind of in my neck of the woods.
Do it.
This book is like a perfect example of something that Terry Pratchett always talked about.
I've never read Terry Pratchett.
Oh, I've only read the first Discworld book, The Color of Magic. And it was so good that I had to like say, I can't read any more of this for a while because I will just try to copy it. You know?
I get that.
But he has this great concept that he gave it like a speech or something where I first stumbled across it back in like 1979. This concept of the consensus fantasy universe.
Mm-hmm.
And this universe that we all sort of understand instinctually, which is where Rat Queens is. Like, there are dragons, there are wizards, there are people who use swords. Like, there's no time wasted re-explaining any of that.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, nope, this is how it is. There's magic, and there's potions, and there's cultists, and ninjas, and, you know, dwarves.
Because that's what the story needs. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, and that, like, and I kind of love that it takes place in that universe, that, like, this is just how things are. This is how they are. I'm not going to waste any time, like, convincing you or explaining why it is. It's just there. There it is. Enjoy it. Let's have a big fight.
This is a great usage of a generic setting.
Yeah,
so far, have we seen anything that really sets this setting, this world, apart from other fantasies? No. Does it need to have anything special? Nope. Because he's not trying to sell you on the idea of in a land where blah da blah is bloop de blue. He's like, no, here's some awesome characters doing some fun stuff. And really just running with those elements.
Yeah.
And by the way, we're going to swear a lot.
Oh.
You know, it's just, which, do you know what this most reminds me of? You went to Terry Pratchett, I went mm-hmm. to Archer.
Oh, I've never really watched that show.
You've never watched Archer? Oh, man, what?
I have a complicated relationship with that production studio. Because I'm from Georgia and I know some of them, so, yeah.
You know.
Also, and I thought Frisky Dingo made me want to, like, stab my eyes out. So when they were like, and the new show from the creators of Frisky Dingo, I was like, no, thank you. I haven't had cable in a while, so.
One of the great things about living outside the country mm-hmm. is the filter, the crap filter is pretty high.
right?
I'm like frisky. I don't know what that is. But something like Archer, like I don't think I found out about it.
Oh, so if you hear about it, it's legitimately pretty good.
A decent amount of times. I mean, people still talk about, like, you know, Big Bang Theory, which is crap. It's crap wrapped in a crap biscuit surrounded by crap that's not funny. And if any of you are offended by my saying that, then I'm sorry, you have bad taste in what's funny.
Yeah, you are unaware of how humor operates.
Yeah, yeah.
We apologize.
Also, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, terrible.
I kind of like that show. It's dumb. I'll watch anything with Andre Brower in it, for starters.
No, and I watched like almost the full season just being like, Andre Brower, I wanted to support you, but I finally got to the point where I was like, no, things have to be funny to be funny.
It's the show I watch when I, like, I'm going to eat a sandwich, and I just want something on for 20 minutes. It's that kind of show. I'm not going to defend it.
Okay. I'm going to back away. Go download Men of a Certain Age. It's much better. It's not funny, but it's Andre Brower. But what the fuck was I talking about?
We're talking about Rat Queens.
Rat Queens. But yeah, because it's that thing of why it reminded me of Archer was that you have these characters who are fun characters, but most of the joy of even the violence isn't just like, here's some badass action. It's kind of the interplay of the main cast while all this is going around them. So it's not so much about like, look, here's these heroes doing heroic things and having adventures. It's like, hey, look, they're having adventures. By the way, they can't really stop arguing in a very stylistic manner. Mm-hmm. And it's that interplay of the argument that really gets a lot of the fun across.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, the action sequences in the comic, they're well-drawn, and they're fun, and they're good, but you're not reading them for the...
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're fine. I mean, you're reading it for the humor and the characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And you only enjoy the fights because you're sold on the characters.
Yeah, and the action sequences, that was one of my parts where I thought the art didn't service well.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's never a flow. There's very rarely a flow to the fight scenes. It's mm-hmm. almost just like snippets of action. Which,
yeah.
You know, I can recognize stylistically, but my personal preference is if there's going to be a fight scene, you know, there needs to be more cartooning, more storytelling, more like, how did this beat get into this beat? You almost need to be blocking out the fight. And I mean, not to like the Dragon Ball Z aspect of it, but
I would love to see Rat Queens have a Dragon Ball Z fight.
What?
Well, I think what it is, like, I think you're right that it's clearly a stylistic choice.
Yeah.
But it's the question: did you choose this style because you can't do anything else?
Yeah.
It's always the question.
In some pages, but, it works fine, but when there's a couple times it's fine. It just. When it's one page of just like, look, they're badass, that's great. But when it's like three or four pages in an issue of just like random scenes of violence, I'm kind of like, you could be telling me a story about this violence rather than just like
snaps. Well, I feel like this is clearly such a writer-driven book.
Yeah.
That's all about the dialogue. So I imagine that a lot of the acreage of each issue is taken up with dialogue.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe he didn't have as much room to do a full expansive fight scene.
Maybe,
you know?
Maybe. Which is kind of, you know, what I'm saying. When there is that room, when it's given that room, I'd like to see more made out of it.
I want to see them have a Dragon Ball Z fight against the four Daves.
Ooh. I don't know, because I want the four Daves to stick around.
I think they would take the four Daves out, no question.
Well,
four Daves clearly need a spinoff. Also, yeah, I'd read that.
Do you know what actually won me over from the four Daves right from the beginning?
Mm-mm.
Kids in the Hall.
Oh yeah,
these are the Daves I know. That song.
Oh, yeah, I remember
and the
that
moment
bit.
I hey the four Daves in my head, I heard Bruce McCullough going, "These are the Daves I know. I know. These are the Daves I know." I'm like, I hope these guys stick around and don't die because Kids in the Hall. Which if that
I love them right away because I love dumb jokes. Like, this is Orc Dave. And I was like, ha, ha, ha. Okay, yeah, that's fine.
Bluebird.
I'm curious to see, because like I said, I only read the first trade, the first arc.
And I read
so I'm curious to see how the characters are explored more, because they kind of hint at, like, Violet's backstory and, I'm sorry, my brain is fried.
Yeah,
Violet and Dee. They talk a lot about Violet and Dee's backstory, you know, with her shaving off her beard and her brother comes by and all that stuff. And Dee has the family of Cthulhu worshippers.
Yeah.
Really want her to come back to the family religion. Like, I really hope that's explored to great detail.
It's got to be, because, I mean, the end of that first arc is, you know, look, here's our book of not Cthulhu.
Yeah, not Cthulhu. It's not Cthulhu. It's another combination of consonants that makes you feel like it's Cthulhu, but it's not. It's different. It's
totally not. You know, like, I mean,
it's like Sathagwa.
Sathagwa is the sleeping rabbit, right?
Yeah, he's the rabbity looking one in the old Chaosium book. You know, like, there's a 50% chance he'll just stay asleep. And a 25% chance if you wake up, you break lettuce, everything's cool.
But yeah, because it ends kind of... I also have a nice little soft spot in my heart for things that deal well with elder gods and Cthulhu-ish stuff.
Yes. You know,
earlier on, talked about Hellboy. Cthulhu, boom. You got me sold a little bit.
I am on board.
You know. There was something... Do you have a favorite?
A favorite character? Yeah. Oh, man. That's a tough call. Do I have to choose?
Of course.
Yeah, I have to make a choice.
While you're brainstorming, I think...
Okay.
If I had to choose now, I think I'd have to go with Betty.
Okay.
Because she's charming. She's you know...
You have similar hairstyles.
We have similar hairstyles. She's fun. And also, I gotta respect that I don't think it's that easy to take the innocent character, which, you know, you can argue in this group of four she's the innocent.
Sure.
And make her appealing.
Well, maybe she's carefree.
There you
instead
go.
Instead of innocent. Because she's clearly about the murder.
No, she really is, yeah. But to make the carefree the slightly ditzy one and not make her, like... A lot of times when other works have used that stock character, it's annoying as crap.
Yeah.
And the fact that he really pulls it off and makes her the heart of the group without being a pain in the ass, I respect.
Yeah.
And that's why I got, like, right now, from the five issues, I gotta say... But she also gets a lot more screen time, so maybe that's why she kind of stands up.
Yeah, I think if I had to pick one, it would probably be Hannah. Like, I love that character of the, I don't care about anything, and I'm a badass. But basically, I love that, like, it seems like clearly established that she is a fuck-up. Like, she sort of seems to be the de facto leader of this group. Not that they really have a leader, but, like...
But she would... People listen.
She's a shitty person. Like, she's one of those people that is like, I'm a shitty person, and I'm going to lean into that.
Yeah.
You know? Like, except for when my friends are in trouble, and then I'll be, you know, like... I dig that they're powerful female characters, but they're allowed to be morally questionable.
Yeah.
You know? They don't have to be paragons.
But didn't you know that women means good? Violet and Dee are the most powerful characters.
Can you imagine being the DM for this fucking group? Like, if you had to DM the Rat Queens,
you know,
I wouldn't do it. I'd be like, no, I'll just pull out a gun and shoot myself now, because anything I build, you will burn to the ground.
That, like, it's interesting thinking about that first troll appearance. If this were a game, would that be the DM just losing, like, his temper and being like, okay, you know what? Troll. Fucking fight a troll.
All of the trolls. Ninja trolls. Save versus death magic. twice.
Do it.
And you're drunk. You're drunk too. You know,
yeah, like, that's negative. Did you count your negative?
Did you get your negative, your con score? Did you calculate it? I bet you didn't.
But I'm a dwarf. Fuck you. You don't have a beard. You don't count.
You don't have a beard anymore. You don't count. I'm considering you a human. Take your extra skill point. Get on my face. You don't get stone cunning anymore.
Oh, good, because we're in a forest.
This is what we call the part of the podcast where you need about 10 years of nerd cred to remotely care what we're talking about.
It probably you won't, but we're having fun, so that's really what counts. Shit. Point.
I kind of like that reading, though, that if you view, because it's clearly supposed to be a Dungeons & Dragons game. Clearly.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that will continue on with this concept of everything bad that happens to them is just their dungeon master
losing his temper. Come on, look at my plot.
Ninjas! Fight ninjas!
Oh, man, and that makes the old Bernadette thing so much funnier. Mm-hmm. If that's the voice. She's not old. She's only 39. She's old.
Is Steven running this game?
I think so.
Yes!
She's not old. Yeah, she's totally old.
No, my NPCs are cool. Stop making fun of them. You know what? She was the villain all along.
There you go.
Deal with
anonymous Black Glad assassins.
Wait, are they mute? Okay, sorry. We're about to do inside jokes, and we should just stop.
But
we do it on our own.
One of the things is, see, the reason kind of why Hannah wouldn't be up to my top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
Is she's a magician. Magicians are icky. No, because as a magician, she doesn't seem to have clear limits. You know, and I mean, none of these characters, since they're all uber badass, have those clear limits. But kind of to have that as a magician, it's kind of too much of like, I can do whatever the story requires. And he doesn't really play that card up until the last issue of the arc, but it's still kind of there.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that that's kind of a thing in all comic book narratives.
Yeah.
Like, I ran out of web fluid.
Whoops.
You know, like...
Yeah, no,
it's kind
is...
of the deal with any hero. They have their powers until it matters that they don't.
Yeah, no.
You know, and I know I'm guilty of writing stories, perhaps, that have that whole concept.
No, it's still really well done, but it's just enough of a thing to kind of keep her from, like, being like, that character is my favorite, to like, no, I like her. She's fun to read.
Do you think that's because of your deep knowledge of Dungeons & Dragons? Do you think an outsider would not have that problem?
Probably.
Actually,
Because this is such an obviously D&D infused book, like part of me was going like, so exactly how many charges does that wand have? How many are they gonna
what was the caster level? That seems unlikely.
They're asking for a spell components, which is cool, but you know, You just showed me.
Is that a somatic spell? I don't believe that it is.
So I'm a.
You know they have to get that. You know they probably get emails and tweets and stuff about that of people trying to apply the actual game rules to the game.
And it's like I said, it's not going to be like I'm not going to throw my hands down in nerd frustration, but it will be enough for me to kind of be like. She'll be one of my of the great characters. She will be the lesser of the great characters. Kind of like another little not quite nerd rage is, I guess, big spoiler because blah. When Violet gets her throat shot out, like it's a great moment, but it's also one of those things that like in a world. Filled with blood and death and nastiness that this world is, having that happen to a main character, but then having her not die, does kind of hurt the tension in a way. It's like, so...
Yeah. That's a problem in all sort of superheroic narratives.
Yeah.
But I know, especially because they went to great trouble to kill off, like, cool side characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to show that they're dark.
Like,
but then they're like, pay no attention to the plot armor that the four main characters are wearing.
Exactly, exactly. And, I mean, like, I think there's understandable rules of comic book dumb. So even when it's that, like, you know, oh, look, we're the main character, so we're a little bit more super. Even though we don't have special durability as a mutant power. Yeah, no, we totally do. But it's if she'd gotten hit in the arm, even like somewhere in the chest or the stomach, sure, she can come back. But it was the explicit going through the throat was a little like, you know.
I wonder if maybe in later issues they'll explore that.
Yeah.
The idea of, like, resurrection repercussions.
Yeah.
Like there are in actual D&D. That'd be kind of cool.
That'd be cool. And, you know.
Like, this was a mortal wound. You're going to see ghosts every night at 2 a.m. They're going to freak you out.
Dude, not ghosts.
You know, like, or whatever.
But also, now that I'm thinking of this as a D&D game, D as an atheist cleric totally sounds like something a jerk player character would do.
Well, I'm a cleric, but I'm an atheist, but I keep all my domain spells. Like, and it's also like, well, wait, why is your god still giving you the power?
I'm goddess enough. Like, that's an actual line from the book.
A cleric of Cthulhu. Cthulhu would never turn off the faucet.
No.
Cthulhu doesn't care. He doesn't even know you're there.
Yeah, sure, magic. I don't know.
Have you read, kind of a tangentially related, have you read Ogloff?
No.
A webcomic?
No.
It's OG webcomic
knowledge is weak.
You'll like it. It's super dirty. So, so dirty. But it's set in almost like that same sort of universe as Rat Queens. Mm. And there's this recurring joke about, oh, I wish I could remember his name, these clerics that worship this god, that all he promises you is that when you die, it will be the most awful torment you will ever, ever know. So, every moment that you're alive is better than when you will die, so you must celebrate every moment, because he will torment you for eternity as soon as you die.
See, and that, I was like, that sounds like this could belong right in with this.
Yeah, I would be very surprised if Rat Queens creators and the creator of Ogloff, who I can't remember right now, I'm sorry, I'm terrible with names, aren't aware of each other. You should read it. You'll know in the first, like, two or three comics whether it's for you. And this is for you listeners at home. Oh. But it's super dirty. Like, so, like there are cum sprites.
I physically dirty. Just stopped what I was doing. Like, okay. That's
it's hilarious, though.
An issue not to be found in an Image comic.
Right.
But comics are for kids.
Kids. Comics, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's any other big... There's some fun story hooks in here. The the brother of Violet...
Violet, like, I really had to decide between Violet and Hannah. I like Violet a lot.
Yeah.
Because I really like that sort of stoic character. I love the, like, you know, the Sturm Brightblade to keep our Dragon Land references going. It's like, I'm here to wreck shit. That's what I do.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of, like, that really, like, lawful, ordered character, especially compared to the rest of them, because the rest of them are pretty chaotic.
Oh, totally.
Like, I dig her a lot, and I really, like, there's a lot of resonance to the little bit we know about her backstory, really interested to read more about her.
She's right up in your field.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I think of the characters here, if you were to create something for D&D, it would most likely, more often than not, resemble Violet.
Yeah, I think you're correct.
Yeah.
I think you're correct. Like, Mike or you would be Betty... And,
Mike would totally be Betty. God,
yeah,
none
would
of
him.
The listeners know.
Would hate him. And, yeah, so.
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to do it. Screw it, listeners. We're going to talk about people you don't know. Steven.
Okay, yeah, let's do this. Let's talk about him.
Steven would somehow, like, mush together the two darker aspects of both Dee and Hannah.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, he, and the fact that she just says she's an atheist, but really she's still in with the cult. That would be his character, yeah.
And the leftover parts of those characters would be just generic whoever else is playing.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm here too.
I don't know. Would I be a Betty?
I think you'd either be Betty or Hannah.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah. But you would also try to, like, multi-class her into, like, an assassin somehow. And
maybe.
It would be bad. Hey, well, I found this one rule in an appendix of a discontinued book that allows me to summon werewolves from as a zero-level cantrip.
Hey, we all went through that phase. Sir. I like this.
We should Skype play D&D sometime soon.
Oh, we totally should. We gotta... Yeah. I keep on flipping through the issue, and I keep on looking at how great the acting in the art is. Just the great facial expressions.
He does body language wonderfully.
Amazingly well. Like, for whatever storytelling weaknesses I might have mentioned in the action scenes, the fact that you can always tell how a character is saying something is just, it's really remarkable. And
all the character designs are really good too, even for the side characters and random orcs and everything.
Yep,
like it is very solid work. Like, it's very good.
Which makes the guy more of a jerk.
Yeah.
You know, because I want to like his stuff.
Don't fuck up when we like your art, please.
Yeah.
Which is impossible asking that of all artists, because artists are crazy. That's how it works.
It's true. It's kind of, you know.
Yeah, if you weren't crazy, you'd be working at Home Depot or something.
So, I mean, we've already established it, but do you want to read more of this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. I want to read more of this. Yeah. I will, like I said, I'll have a very, I don't know. Like, I feel like I'm gonna buy it the next trade. Like, I won't be able not to, because, like, it's so good, and I like the characters, and yeah.
I think if they come out with like an oversized, like the first year, the first 12 issues in like a thing, then I might buy it.
Okay.
You know, I don't buy
issues anymore. I haven't done that in a long, long time. I just always wait for the trade. If there's no trade, I'm not going
to
read it.
Yeah. I am not going to discuss how I get my comics.
Okay.
You know. I mean, that's, again, that's the shitty thing about living in a foreign country is, cool. I mean, people are complaining about, like, some comics can be, you know, $3-4 an issue. I'm like, dude, if I want to buy any comic, I have to magically find a store and then be prepared to buy, like, you know, $9-10 for an issue.
Wow.
Or I wait for a trade of something sight unseen and give it a shot that way.
That's rough.
And I mean, there's Comixology and stuff like that, but...
Yeah. And you could get it legally.
I mean, not that I would.
No, but doesn't DC... I know a couple, like DC at least, don't they do digital versions of a lot of their comics?
They do. I subscribe to Marvel Unlimited.
Okay.
Which is great. It opens up pretty much a crap ton of Marvel's back catalog, and I think the new books are on like a 6-month rotation. And it's pretty cheap per month. So it's like, even if I'm not impressed with what's going on currently in the Marvel universe, it means like I can get really clean copies of, like, you know, classic stuff or stuff like I've always wanted to read the Byrne Fantastic Four. Ooh, here I go. What's this Tomb of Dracula? Ooh, I'll read that. And you know, and so I'm the fan that, like, when they put out, here's new this week, and like now 60% of it is latest crap that's coming out. Like, wow, Rick Remender wrote something. I don't care. But then it's, you know, the 70s or 80s comics. I'm like, yay! That's what makes me happy. But they don't do that as much because they want to encourage people to buy their new stuff.
Weirdly.
I know, right? But, you know, if their new stuff were better, I'd be more excited about it.
Ooh. I mean, if it was like the old stuff, then I would like it. I mean, well,
you know, I mean, if,
get it together.
Yeah, that's in a way I want to be like no, but at the same time, Marvel is not producing as consistently good entertainment. They're basically just writing up until the big world-shattering chaos event, which disrupts all the titles, and then they go back, and I'm generally not impressed with those events.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a whole other podcast in and of itself.
True.
Like, I haven't really had much interest in a lot of, like, DC Marvel stuff in a long time.
Yeah.
Ever since they kind of permanently severed any sort of creator-creation bond, where someone could tell a story without someone coming in and knocking over all their toys, or putting, oh, you're getting really popular with this weird little book, let's put you on the big book! You know,
let's look at Guardians. Ooh, you guys are actually, you know, you're not selling as well, but you're getting a lot of appeal to these books. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to get our big artist who really doesn't care about any of the characterizations you've set up, and they're just going to take a shit all over it and do what they want.
It's Young Justice Teen Titans over and over again.
Don't you say those names.
That also would be a podcast.
At some point, you and I would just need to record a podcast of drinking while talking about the horrors of what Geoff Johns did to Young Justice.
I get sick just thinking about it.
He shall not be forgiven.
It would be different if he did all that and told the most amazing story I've ever read in my life.
Yeah.
He did all these horrible things to these wonderful characters and told the most boring retread of...
Hey, you know who is great? Oh, stop it. So, Rat Queens.
Rat Queens?
Yeah.
But Rat Queens is good. Read Rat Queens.
Yeah, no, seriously. I really think, like, if you're okay with some ultra-violence, if you're okay with some strong language and... How would you call it, like, strongly implied sexuality? Because there's nothing...
Visible. Oh, no, it is overt. There's no sex scenes in it.
Yeah,
I but mean, it is really clear they are fucking.
Yeah, yeah.
If they talk about fucking, you see, like...
Yeah.
It's sex positive. It's sex positive.
It's not, it's great. It's not graphically graphic, but it's definitely overt.
Yeah.
Like, people it is will basically like, by the way, lives. We are going to go get fucked a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're... okay with all that stuff, then totally give this a shot. If that's the sort of thing that will make you kind of pull away and be like, ooh, that's a little too bawdy for my tastes, then, you know, this
it's
might
too
not
salty for me.
Exactly. So, Derek, I hear you wrote a book and are about to write another one? What's this?
It is true. I actually wrote a book that came out a little over a year and some change ago called Spellsword. And I have a new book, a sequel, called The Riddle Box, that comes out on November 26th. As I'm not quite sure when this podcast will air. Could be in the future, could be the past.
I'm trying to do the math in my head. I think it'll be right around that same time.
Yeah. Like I said, it's honestly kind of the same sort of vibe as Rat Queens in a lot of ways. Like, it's weirder. It's much weirder, but it's definitely me playing with all the toys in the fantasy toolbox and just having fun with it. So,
I've read Spellsword and enjoyed it. You can find my reviews of it, but and like I said, it's that same spirit of fun, but it's more clean fun.
No, it sounds boring.
I mean, no, you don't say fuck and you don't talk about the characters.
Yeah, there isn't long discussions about how they're going to hook up after the party.
Yeah,
But yeah, you go to my blog, spellsword.com. There's free, the first three chapters of both books are there. You can read them for free. And if you like them, you can buy the book for $1.
Yay.
An ebook. The Dead Tree version is more expensive.
Yeah, now when you said the November 26th, that's is that just the ebook or?
That'll be ebook, and barring unforeseen calamity, of the paperback will be available same day.
Okay, cool. Because that's what I'm saving up for, the paperback. I want to set it right next to its neighbor.
It looks so good. It looks so good.
The cover art's great. Yeah. Cool. Any other online presence besides your blog and?
Oh, I'm on Twitter at gderekadams.com. Actually, just at gderekadams. Sorry. I'm on Elo too, though I stopped using it because it broke all the time.
But it was cool and indie that I never used.
Yeah, right. And there's a Spellsword fan page on Facebook. You may follow me if you wish, any of those places. Yay. I will be delighted to interact with you on the internet.
Ha ha! Internet ho!
Right.
Cool. Any last comments for the?
I thought this is a really interesting book. Like, for me, who really likes the fantasy genre, this was kind of a treat. Because it's not your typical superhero comic. And I honestly don't read as many comics as you do, Brent. So for something to really get my attention and me come and read it, it's kind of got to float up a little bit.
Yeah.
So this is very much in my wheelhouse. I had a great time reading this book, and I look forward to reading the rest of it.
I think I'll make this bold claim: of the strictly fantasy comics I've read, this is probably the best, especially the best modern.
Yeah, I don't know, probably pound for pound, maybe all of ElfQuest, going old school type stuff. But generally, when they write a modern, in the last 10 years,
in the last 10 years.
Any fantasy comic is probably going to be either a Conan sort of thing.
Yeah.
Though a friend of mine recommended a comic called Princess Ugg. Yeah, UGG. I've heard that's really good. And it's kind of in a similar vein, but not quite the same.
Yeah, I've
read... It's probably about a barbarian princess that goes to a school for princesses. And all the other princesses are Disney princesses. And hijinks ensue.
Awesome.
But most other modern fantasy comics are just boring.
And even the ones that are fun, for example, Skull Kickers by Jim Zub.
I'm not familiar.
Yeah, it's fun. It's perfectly fine. It just didn't grab me. Whereas this, I finished one issue and I just wanted to go ahead and read the next one. Whereas Skull Kickers, I finished an issue and was like, oh, that was good. But I didn't feel that compulsion to go pick it up.
Yeah, this is like candy. It's like delicious narrative candy. Oh boy, what's going to happen next?
And something about all the Conan or the Red Sonja or the what do you call it? The D&D/Pathfinder comics. They just I really want to like them, but they just somehow they leave me cold. I just don't.
I feel like those sort of comics, they get really caught up in the trappings of the genre. Okay, I'm telling a Conan story. There has to be this, and then there's this, and then this happens, and then this kind of thing, and then there'll be a chick with big boobs, and then,
yeah.
And kind of the Pathfinder ones, too. Okay, I need to reference this class, and this place, and this, they get caught up in the trappings, but there's no meat in there. There's no story.
Here's a question for you. I think you've read more of these characters than I have, and this just came to me now. Would these characters kind of be the modern comic version of Fawford and the Grey Mouser? The kind of hey, here's a lot of fantasy rules. We're going to kind of use them, but we're also going to fly in the face of some of them for the sake of adventure.
It's hard to say. Fawford and the Grey Mouser, Fritz Lieber, there's definitely the sense of fun and action. I definitely think Fawford and the Grey Mouser and the Rat Queens will get on a house on fire.
Yeah.
But there is something sort of about Fawford and the Grey Mouser that gets a little mythic and strange.
Yeah.
Even amidst the drunken brawls and them being in trouble and escaping.
Yeah.
There's sort of that weird extra planar, we're going to hang out with Loki and Odin today. It was the 70s and there's sort of this.
That'll be issue 20.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe the Rat Kings will get more into that, but it's definitely the same sort of feeling of fun. But I don't know, Fawford and the Grey Mouser and Fritz Lieber are huge touchstones for me.
Yeah.
So they're not quite on the same level, but they're definitely playing the same park.
So these guys are, you know, they're just starting out, and it's too much to bestow that upon them. But it's not just blown out of the water, no.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They're definitely, like I said, they're in the same realm, but just not, I think they're aiming at different things, too. Yeah. It's not like Rat Queens is failing or anything. It's just, it's a different type of story.
Cool. Well, then I'm going to wrap things up. Again, I'm Brent. You can find me at deadlytroubadour.com. Also, if you're listening to this show through iTunes, please take a moment, rate it, review it. And if you have suggestions about stuff you want to hear me talking about, hear us talking about, email me at deadlytroubadour@gmail.com. Mr. Adams, you want to do one more plug?
My blog is spell-sword.com. You can find all my other internet connectivity things there as well. I look forward to interacting with you on the internet.
Yes, yes. Goodbye, goodbye, yes.